This is an audio recap of the College Completion Summit hosted by the University of Utah and the Lumina Foundation. On September 30th and October 1st, 2019, the College Completion Summit brought together presidents and senior leaders from public universities that have significantly advanced their college completion rates. Beth Akers, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, leads a panel discussion titled Innovative Financial and Affordability Solutions.
But I imagine that most students who start degrees just have no idea about the intrinsic risk in this investment, driven largely by the fact that there's a really good chance that they won't finish their degree. So why is that a huge problem? I think it's implicit in everything that we've said here today, but it's what economists will call the sheepskin effect. The fact that half of a college degree does not yield half of the returns to a college degree. I don't pay for half a degree and then get an extra $500,000 over the course of my career because of it. I get a much, much, much smaller share. We all know that the benefits, of the financial benefits at least, of higher education come when you cross the finish line, which is why we're all here talking about it and sort of implicitly know that this is really important. People going off to college today does not look like students going off to college in the movies. These are people with adult, living, financially independent experience. 64% of them are working, 40% of them are working full time, which is, I think, one of the questions from the first panel, and a quarter of them have children. So, you know, quite simply, what is getting in the way of them graduating? It's life. It's the challenges that come from life.
Here's Shannon Goodman, Vice President for Enrollment at the University of North Texas.
One of the things is to keep them ideally continuously enrolled. We know that we look at our data, those students that are progressing through and they continue to have a toe in the water do better. This encourages students to stay continuously enrolled, and it's for Texas residents. And what we did is it's a traditional lock-in tuition for a student, so for the 4 years, so you'll get in there and get. We're also encouraging students, if you take 15 hours, let's say in the fall semester, then the winter session, you can get, if you choose to take a course, you can get $100 per credit hour off that, off any course that you take. It's what is the experience for the student. So trying to get them a benefit, a real benefit for them to, for affordability, to get them through a pace in a way that we incentivize, say, hey, if you're going to come here and do a winter session or come for a summer, we got to give you a discount, and hopefully you'll see the benefit at the end because you'll actually progress and get out in a quicker time.
Ruth Watkins, president of the University of Utah.
So we've launched an income share pilot program here at the University of Utah called Invest in You. Now, why did we do that, and what are we trying to accomplish? So what we observed is that there are a significant number of students at the University of Utah that wind up leaving after year three or even year four. Or they get to year four, they get within a year of finishing, and then it takes them 3 years to finish that last year. So we decided to develop our pilot for students quite near the degree finish line and begin our income share program for students who are within a year of finishing their degree. So that's the first element of our program. Remember that an income share program is essentially an equity-based model that says we believe in you, we're going to invest in you, and make tuition assistance possible to help you finish in a year. So, you know, we're providing a component of financial assistance to help people finish. And then students will repay based on their salaries. This is 2.85% of their income back to the equity-based program. And as we talked with students and student focus groups in building this program, they helped us with a good tagline that is, I think, pay today's tuition with tomorrow's earnings.
Jorge Perez, Associate Vice President for Academic Affairs and Student Success at the University of Tennessee.
I'm sure that when you guys saw Jorge Perez, you thought, oh, I wonder where in Tennessee he's from, right? I'm a native of Cuba. And when we left my country, we left literally with the clothing on our backs. And everything that I've been able to accomplish and everything that my brothers accomplished, we did so because of higher education. Now, you may know that the former governor of Tennessee sort of began this snowball rolling in terms of higher education in Tennessee with an initiative called Drive to 55, which is similar to an initiative that was mentioned earlier. And basically, it's that by the year 2030, 55% of the population of Tennessee will have some kind of credential beyond high school. One initiative that came out of that sort of momentum that was building for higher education was called the Tennessee Promise. And it is a last dollar scholarship for students to attend two-year institutions. We now have something called the UT Promise. Students who receive this scholarship are required to participate in 8 hours of community service, and they have to log that service by semester or they lose the scholarship. Another component of the scholarship that I think is very innovative is that mentoring is required as well. So students who receive the UT Promise scholarship will be mentored by someone. And obviously, these are high-impact practices.
Bridget Cram, Director of Academic Programs and Partnerships at Florida International University.
We know, and I'll share some data later, that emergency makes a difference. And we know that if we help students get through these emergencies, and it's just a small dollar amount, that they will be able to remain enrolled and complete their degrees. If a senior who had been on the cancellation list but was on a payment plan has emergency dental surgery and they have to choose between finishing making their payments or, you know, staying enrolled, the scholarships office would reach out to me and say, hey, the student is on track to graduate. Can we use your completion grant to help them make those payments and stay enrolled? Being in Miami, we are very close, and we are involved in, you know, the damage that hurricanes can inflict. We have a large student population that some of them are international students, but some of them are from those countries, have connections to those countries. And when your home country is completely decimated, you need all the help you can because you are not able to make those tuition payments. And I'm pleased to announce that we only had one student who was canceled by choice, but we're keeping in contact with them from the Bahamas out of 114 that we had identified. So the system does work. The average award that we give is $1,000, and it really, really does make a difference. I have some data here, but when we look at those 2,000 students who received the aid, 26% had graduated, 71% continued to be enrolled, so that's over 97% who had been retained or graduated that we served.
Akers opens the discussion.
I'll begin with you, Bridget. So obviously you have limited funds, and so how do you go about rationing the resources that you do have?
So if you owe $347.27, and that is all you need, that is what we give you. So it's a case-by-case basis. It is time-intensive, which is why the team aspect is so important. But by reviewing each case, by talking to the student, we give them exactly what they need. So if that student who owes $3,000 needs $2,000, we can provide that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Jorge, I'd like to ask you a question about the UT Promise program. It was interesting for you to note the mentoring aspect and the community service aspect. And so I wondered how you think about, in that program, balancing the needs of students to get those resources, but also demanding something of them in order to get it.
It's an intention to keep them really engaged, you know, but it's sort of a quid pro quo, isn't it? That you know, you're receiving a scholarship, but you've got to give something back to your community. The scholarship launches in the fall of 2020. I think a lot of students will benefit from it.
President Watkins, I cover the income share agreement space, but I wonder if you could talk about whether or not you faced opposition in the planning of this program and how you think about that.
I think that the way we tailored the program and designed it really for Utah's needs helped a lot with diffusing some of the complexity. I also think the fact that we engaged students in the conversation quite early with focus groups and dialogue helped us design a program that will meet their needs. So we have faced relatively little, I think, resistance. And I think, remembering, we have one purpose with this program, one, and that is helping our students graduate. And there is no time that we talk about this program that we don't start there.
Question from the audience.
So as an RA, just a couple weeks ago, one of my residents had to drop out because, like, financial, like, aid problems. And I asked, like, why didn't you tell me about this earlier? And she said, I'm just really bad at asking for help. And so how is the university communicating with their students that it's okay to ask for help, this isn't something to be ashamed of?
Bridget Cram, Florida International University.
And like I said, the syllabi language is really important, getting that from their faculty. We also have student ambassadors, so like students who have had financial aid before as we expand the program, emergency aid, they tell their other students, and then they come to like, oh, so-and-so told me about this. How can, you know, this happened to me. How can you help me? But another thing we do is we call the students. So we have student workers committed to calling students on the cancellation list, calling students who have missed their first payment plan, just reaching out and asking them if they need help.
Jorge Perez, University of Tennessee.
I think that part of the solution needs to happen before students get to the university. And so you could watch a video of a peer telling you basically how to navigate some of those really complex things. And think about it, if you're a first generation student, there's probably not someone in your family who can even tell you, you know, where to go or how to fill out this application.
Shannon Goodman, University of North Texas.
Because individuals were often a little reluctant to ask for help, no matter what you put in place around that. So one of the things that we're trying to get better at is to see the signs, right? And to take a look and then to have those, and I think you mentioned earlier about, you know, having interventions in place, not waiting for somebody to raise their hand. We know what the signs are.
Bridget Cram, Florida International University.
So for us, the freshman indicators are, if you're on sub-warning, if we know you lost your financial aid, if you haven't turned in your appeal, if you haven't looked on your message board, we're calling those students too, right, to kind of explain that process. Some students get very overwhelmed. They're like, I have no idea how to appeal. It is easier for me to drop out and go to a community college than do all of this paperwork. So for freshmen specifically, that's what we look at.
Question from the audience.
Yeah, my question, I think, is for President Watkins around the Completer grant. So we don't have nearly, we just had a recent donation for some money. But the question is around the approach you used for who got the money. So you're a junior, you know, do you use analytics? Do you use, you know, what's the best approach to make sure it goes to the students that need it?
So we invited students in this pilot, everybody within, I believe there's 18 majors, and those 18 majors cut across the colleges and the campus. Everybody who was within a year of completing got an invitation to participate. And getting sort of diffuse messaging about this opportunity has not been entirely easy. So I think that's a question for our students in the room. What is the most effective way to reach you about opportunities, about resources, whether it's emergency assistance or this more planful approach to getting you across the degree finish line? The communication element remains one of the biggest challenges, I think.
Question from the audience.
But as a first-generation college student, I'm a fourth year, my parents still do not understand my financial aid package, and sometimes I sit there and I struggle to understand. So what programs do you guys implement to educate parents about financial literacy?
Shannon Goodman, University of North Texas.
This is literacy that's got to start much earlier than high school. You know, you can't wait until senior year and say, now's the time. This education has to start earlier. So we're out in the communities trying to get that literacy early. And it's not just the literacy for, and this is UNT, right? We're out there and we're talking about financial aid. We're talking about what those programs mean as a whole.
Akers summarizes her takeaways from the discussion.
I think what's really exciting about the conversation we're having today is that in the absence of unlimited funds to get students in and through college, we see that institutions are really being creative about how to spend their resources to create programs that work for students in the way that they really need help.
Thank you for listening. Find the audio recap of the next panel discussion, Leveling the Playing Field, Achieving Equity in Completion, and other summit proceedings at collegecompletion.utah.edu.